Welcome to the C-Suite podcast that we're recording at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. I'm Russell Goldsmith, and together with Graham Barrett, we'll be chatting to a number of the speakers and attendees from the conference.
We're producing the show in partnership with Remote, the global HR platform, and we'll be recording the conversations on their booth here in the Creative Industries Expo. Really hope you enjoy this episode. Okay, thrilled to say that I have Dan Clancy here, the CEO of Twitch. Dan, it's great to see you here at South by Southwest.
Graham, it's great being here. Thanks for asking me to come on.
Not at all. So let's talk about your session. It was about the live streaming space, obviously, and it featured some Twitch streamers as well, didn't it? So tell us a little bit more about that session.
Yeah, so the session really was talking about where Twitch is and where Twitch is going and where live stream is going. And luckily, a number of our, a number of very interesting creators came on.
Okay.
Ms. Kiff is one who's been around Twitch for a long time, but who's done a bunch of different stuff. And then Extra Emily, who's recently become popular, and then Sushi Dragon, all doing different creative, interesting things on the stream. So I thought it was a good blend of guests.
Yeah, that's really cool. And is it interesting from your perspective as well, with it being your company, to actually meet some of the streamers?
Well, I spend a lot of time, like I meet streamers all the time. So
yeah.
In fact, I stream myself, I travel around and meet with them. So in fact, actually, I know a lot of the streamers really well, which has been a blast for my role.
Yeah. So what kind of streamers, creators do you have on the platform now, and how has that changed over the
last year? Well, it's really Twitch. Yeah, a lot of people, when they think of Twitch, they think of gaming.
Sure.
Okay, and we still, gaming is still a foundation of Twitch. We have a number of great gamers. But interestingly, from the beginning, Twitch was always about talk. They just happened to be gaming while they were talking.
Right, okay.
But the thing that they found interesting was the personalities of the creator, much like your podcast. Like, you know, it's not just the words, it's who is doing it, right? And so that's always been the case. And what you've seen with Twitch over time is more and more those gamers have stepped out from, gotten up, walked away from the keyboard, and more they just sit and engage with their chat. A huge, like, our biggest category is just chatting, where basically it's just people just chatting with their audience, lots of kind of in real life, where they're out in the world engaging. In fact, of the streamers there, both Extra Emily and Sushi Dragon have really innovated with all sorts of things where they interact with the world. So what you see, if you can think of something, someone is streaming it on Twitch.
Yeah. Did you always anticipate that it would evolve in that way, or has that surprised you?
Well, the interesting thing, and I wasn't there at the very beginning, so I can't say, but I can speak for the founders. Interestingly, when they started it as Justin TV. And the idea was not about gaming at all. It was, let's just have a camera filming my life.
Okay.
Okay, and that's what it was, a camera on Justin Kahn's life. Okay, and the idea, people can just film their life.
Yeah.
And it got some traction, but it was only okay. And the thing that then took off was when Emmett Shear had the instinct that says, okay, no, now we're gonna have them game. Okay, and then it took off, and now the interesting thing, it's coming back full circle, where like one of Twitch's biggest streamers now, Kai Cenat, he's really a lifetime streamer and he's just streaming his life.
Yeah.
And so the thing that they started with that didn't quite take off eventually became Twitch and gaming and eventually came full circle, where now more and more streamers are filming their life.
Yeah. Where do you see this space going next? Obviously, AI is a huge topic of conversation in any sector. How do you see that playing into live streaming?
Yeah, so in my background is in AI. I have a PhD in AI and I've spent a lot of time. And I think it's one of these things that will augment the creative's ability to engage their audience. So there's a lot of fear of AI taking over. I don't think there's any risk of that whatever with Twitch. Twitch ultimately about communities and is about emotional connection with the streamer. But the streamer needs things to react to. And right now it's a game. And the thing that's interesting about games is it's infinitely replayable, and what happens in these exciting games, every time it's different. Well, that's what AI can give you. It's something that there's always can be something to react to. So I think creators will continue, will just start using it to create content.
Yeah. And how do you go about, or do you go about, fostering a sense of community amongst those creators? Is that kind of done organically, or is that something you pay a lot of attention to?
Well, it's interesting. It does happen organically, but we do pay a lot of attention to it. I think Twitch is unique in that the Twitch community has a very strong identity. I've often said, as I became CEO of Twitch, people don't care that much who the CEO of TikTok is. Okay, that's because TikTok is all about people just swiping and everybody's doing their thing.
Sure.
The Twitch community is very engaged, and the streamers have tight, in Austin here, there are a lot of streamers. They like interact with each other all the time in LA. And so there's a strong community, but we're very conscious about engaging with the creators. That's one reason why I come out. I toured the Southeast to meet with a bunch of creators. And so, yeah, engaging with that community and helping them meet each other is a big thing we often think about.
I like that idea, going on the road and meeting creators. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So what's next then for Twitch itself? What are your priorities as CEO for, let's say, the rest of this year?
Yeah. So a big thing that we're doing is trying to help collaboration between streamers. Okay. Because, as I said, what you need is a way to create content. It's actually, we were talking about this earlier, it's actually difficult to sit there and talk to your screen by yourself.
Yeah.
As humans, we're used to talking to other people. Who does a podcast where all they do is blather on themselves? Mm. You get guests to come on. And we didn't do any preparation for this,
No. Right?
And we can just sit here and talk.
Yeah,
so we're focusing, we have what we call Stream Together, make it easier. I'm streaming, you're streaming, I drop in on your stream, I knock on the door, we say, Dan's here. Great, let's hang out together. Maybe somebody else sees us hanging out and they come and join us. And next thing you know, the five of us are just having a good old chat on stream. And so how to build the technology to do that, and then how to make it easy to find other people to collaborate with.
Okay, so there are your priorities. Are you excited about what's to come next?
Yeah, so I mean, I think there's all sorts of stuff happening, in particular in the lifestyle space. Yeah. And so, you know, people often say this, but I think this is true. We're still seeing that creative energy of people with Twitch and about new things happening. User-generated content is all about tapping the creative abilities of the masses, and live streaming is just more and more people are figuring out how that can be part of their content life.
Brilliant. Well, listen, thanks for stopping by. We really appreciate you taking the time, and Dan Clancy.
All right.
Best for the rest of the show.
Thanks for having me, Graham.
Yeah, I'm here with Marcelo Lebra, the president of Remote. Marcelo, it's lovely to see you here at South by Southwest.
Likewise.
Yes.
Great to be here again.
Great to be here again. So you flew in today. It's a bit of a flying visit, isn't
yes.
it? And you've just delivered a talk on the next stage. Is that right?
Yes. Flying in and out.
Yeah. So how did that talk go? What were you talking about?
It's very cool. We talked about, you know, I was joined by Masha Bucher, and we've talked about, you know, what we've seen and the changes of this landscape of not just the companies building within the HR space, but also distributed organizations, and how, you know, Day One is a great investor, has been a great firm and a great partner as well. And what do they see in this space? And what are the changes, the motivations as well to being so keen into the space? And what can we look, and you know, how far can we look ahead? Anticipate what's coming to.
Yeah.
So it's very, very exciting.
Because it's interesting. We met at Slush in Helsinki just before Christmas. I mean, how quickly is the business changing, even in that small time?
Quite a lot.
Yep.
We've had hundreds of people joining since the last time we met. It was actually a bit colder than it is here in Texas. But it's been great. Company has been continue to experience quite a lot of growth, which is great. And, you know, as a co-founder and a president, it's a lot of work, but very exciting. All these new people joining, we have a lot of products coming out. And so it feels like every quarter we're just unlocking yet a new level. Mm. And so hopefully next time we meet, there's another whole thing going on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what could that be? What are you excited about at the moment about where this business could go to?
I'm so excited about, especially the fact that we moved from becoming a one product company to being able to work and wrap around any founder, any leadership, any C-level, VP level that is building an organization that is distributed. And so we've become today the HR backbone of operations, of companies, smaller and big. And that is very, very exciting. Of course, we started from, you know, an employer of record standpoint, and we met a lot of companies across the world hiring remotely, distributed, sometimes even in an office. And now we're going much more into helping full companies develop and being able to find, hire, manage, and pay people across the world, no matter where they are, even with local payroll. And so you get much more involved in the actual day-to-day operations of every business.
Wow, yeah.
And you see more sort of the turn of the earth.
And that must be quite satisfying then to really kind of dig deep into an organization and really find out how they operate. In terms of remote as well, in terms of, you know, all of these different people that you're bringing on, how much of a challenge is that for you to, you know, culture is such an important thing at remote, isn't it? How do you continue to foster that as you grow and grow and grow?
I think we've done pretty well culture-wise.
Yeah.
We've built a very no bullshit, pragmatic standpoint and approach to what a work relationship should be like.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, in this employer-employee relationship where, you know, ever since our inception, we never looked into that or bought into the whole, we're a family. We're not, you know, it's a company.
Yeah.
The company has a purpose. The
yeah.
purpose is to make money. And we're paying people so that we can also make money.
Yeah.
Now, but the idea here and behind this is people need to be happy in order to do their best work. And your job as a company is to understand how to make that, how to leverage that with all the crazy things happening day in, day out. How do you manage, you know, making people happy and making the business profitable? And I find with my experience that it goes hand in hand. The better one is, the better the other one will be as well.
Do you think people's expectations of work have changed and what they expect from a leader?
They expect much more. I think this whole different way of working brought a lot of transparency and clarity, which is a different thing. And people today, they jump ship very easily. You know, you could be in front of your computer working and having a meeting with your annoying boss. 10 minutes later, you're having a meeting with another company and you're applying to another job. And even if you're not in a remote setting, you can do that. So this ability to hire internationally and distributed settings sort of commoditized how their relationship or the loyalty relationship that used to be much longer. And it's different now for a good reason, because you can really find something that makes you happy and not have to dig up and put up with some stuff that you shouldn't.
Yeah. Well, just finishing up, I'd love to get your take on some of the trends that we've been talking about here at South by Southwest, and a big one at actually nearly every conference we go to is AI.
Yep.
How do you see that playing into your offering and how you're going to work now and into the future?
Yeah, it plays out in different levels. One is internally, starts with internally, where every person, you know, now has an Ironman suit to do much more, much faster, much more efficient. And that's one. And so companies will compete with their closest competitor, redundantly speaking, and in speed and efficiency by using these tools. So that's one. And the second level is what do you offer to your customers?
Yeah.
And your customers also expect to reap this benefit, having a lot of stuff done for them and not have to go through manual and gruesome work.
Are we ready for that, do you think, as human beings, for how this is going to transform the way we work and almost working side by side with AI, won't we?
We don't have an option.
No.
Yeah, it's here,
yeah.
So we just have to adapt.
Well, we look forward to seeing what happens. Marcelo Lebra, thanks again for joining me.
Thank you.
See you soon.
Thank you for having me.
Joining me now is Tope Sadiku, who is strategy planning leader at the Kraft Heinz Company. Tope, it's lovely to see you here today.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to see you too. I hope you're having a great day.
Yeah.
Southwest is cool. It's very, very fun.
And you've been very busy, haven't you? You've been speaking on a session which sounded fascinating called Kicking Our Workstation Habits to Improve Brain Health.
Yeah, it was great.
What is that? Yeah.
You know what? So we had someone from the Brain Health Institute. So
okay.
We had like an academic researcher who studies neuroscience. And then we had a friend of mine from HKS, an architectural company based in, actually they're based in Dallas.
Okay.
But she works for Chicago. And then obviously me representing how this can be applied in the workforce and just some thought leadership.
Yeah. So what is our workstation habit then?
I would say, actually, the panel said our problem statement was we are addicted to the workplace. We are addicted to being stationary, which made sense in the times when there was input and output, and we were measured by how effective and productive we were based on how much we produced. Really coming out like Fordism, McDonaldization, and that's where we were. But where we are today is this area of knowledge work, and there are different modes of work. In fact, you could think of there being three main modes of work. So you've got this idea of like focused, deep work, where you need to be void of distraction. You have like a finite period of time to achieve a finite objective. You kind of want to be void of distraction as well. And you really are trying to solve like a very tough problem, maybe on a solo basis with minor interjections from other people. And then the second mode of work is like collaboration. And collaboration can be anything from we are working together on a PowerPoint in an asynchronous way to we need to solve a big, wicked problem in the workplace. And we need a number of different people. And actually, maybe we're going to have to work over like a long period of time. And it's going to be quite, not difficult, but you know, hands-on, very, very focused. And then the third mode of work is this idea of like creativity and inspiration, being in the sense that you need to surround yourself with different stimuli to think in a different way. In fact, maybe you want to really like disrupt your habit so you can actually see things in a new perspective. And I'm a firm believer that the answers to the questions in the world exist in the world already.
Yeah.
Nothing that I know I have ever done is like new and novel to the world. It's just new and novel to the situation that I'm trying to solve. So when we talk about kicking our relationship or kicking the workstation or rethinking the workstation, I think I like that title better.
Yeah.
It's the idea of that these three modes of work don't always occur in one stationary place. They can, but there is another way to think about that.
Yeah. And that third mode of work is really interesting, the creativity side, because I guess that could be alone or that could be collaborative as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
That is right. That is right. And when I think about being creative, I think some of my best ideas have came from, if I'm sat at my desk, I just know to get up and get away. And when I first moved to Chicago, I put my dog on I have a little chihuahua that we rescued. A cruiser, you know, like a bike that you just has no brakes. I put him in the basket and I would just drive up and down Lakeshore Drive, trying to give myself the opportunity to think in a different way. And actually the inspiration that you come by surrounding yourself with nature, or again, different stimuli coming out of your typical environment is second to none.
Yeah, like going for a run, I find, that really comes.
Everybody has their thing.
Yeah.
Everybody has their
thing.
Yeah,
absolutely. Now, you were part of the team that managed the return to work at Kraft Heinz, weren't you? So what do you think remote working has taught us about how we can structure the workplace in the future?
Mm-hmm. In general, if I step back, I think if we look at like the pandemic, what that taught us is that we should separate business objective from physical location. So maybe in the past we thought, I go to school in this place, I socialize with my friends in a coffee shop, I watch movies in a cinema, I exercise at a gym, my home is for my meals, and my workplace is for work. And actually during the pandemic, for some people, one chair at a dining table became all of those different things. And as hard as it was, we were actually able to be kind of like effective. When there's like urgency, when there's a bit of chaos, when there's a sense of urgency, we're really able to move quite quickly.
Yeah.
And I think remote work, this idea of like separating the business objective from physical location, and you can take out business objective, separating objective from location encourages you to really understand like what are we trying to achieve and where and why are we trying to achieve it? Is this still a relevant goal?
Now it's always interesting, you know, in a big organization such as Kraft Heinz to think about workplace culture. How do you foster that at a big company across borders?
I think we all bring different things to work. I think we all bring different backgrounds, experiences. I think we all bring different perspectives. We were all raised in different ways. I am one of four, and my mother always says, you all ate the same food, you lived in the same house, you had the same parents, but you all think differently. And if I can see that in my same nuclear family, I can imagine how varied that is within the workplace. So I think being able to honor and respect what people bring to the table is the best way to really focus on like culture and bring in that international perspective. You know, I've lived in England, my heritage is Nigerian, I now live in America. I bring a variety of who Toppy is, a very colorful spectrum of who I am into the workplace. So anywhere that honors and respects that is going to be a fruitful environment.
Sure. And just one final question. It's always good to look into the future, to project a little bit. What kind of trends do you see coming in the workplace over the next few years?
I like this idea of a gig economy. Maybe what we know to be the gig economy will evolve in the future, but this idea that we come together to solve problems. What I really love about the concepts that Agile brings is that we come together to solve wicked problems in short sprints, in short bursts of efforts, and we bring together like scrums or tribes or squads of people who have a variety of experience and knowledge to solve a problem. And if I think about Agile and I think about the gig economy, I think that could be very interesting to explore in the future. I also think about the addition of like modern technology, like AI, and how that can really enable people to be almost like this Iron Man of a human, you know, human plus technology, and how much stronger we would be. I don't really have a crystal ball, I wish I did, but I think these are some things that I'm just curious to see how they play out, and I really love to be part of the conversation, really trying to figure out how we can apply those in a number of different areas.
Yeah, well, thank you for being part of our conversation.
My pleasure.
Thanks for joining me today.
Of course, my pleasure. Have a wonderful day.
So I'm now joined by Eloise Singer, the creative director and CEO of Singer Studios. Eloise, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you're at South By to promote The Pirate Queen. It's a new game. What's the inspiration for that project? How's it evolved? How did you get to this point?
Very, very good question, exactly. So, we're here to promote The Pirate Queen, which is a VR game that is starring Lucy Liu. And it just released this week on Meta Quest and Steam. And The Pirate Queen is basically a story about a woman in 19th century China who married the leader of a fleet. And then when he mysteriously died, she took over and commanded about 70,000 people during the lead up to the Opium Wars and became the most powerful pirate of all time. And no one seems to know the story, and it's a true story. So I first heard it through a friend of mine who just said, you know, did you know that the most powerful pirate in history was a woman? And I was like, no, that can't be true. You know, it's Blackbeard or, you know, someone of the like. And she was like, no, I promise you, it was a woman in 19th century China. And so I started researching it and looking into it a bit more, and I realized not only was she a very fearless and ruthless leader, but she also paved the way for gender equality. Wow. And she effectively created this code of laws, which meant that men and women had to be treated equally on her ship. So when I heard that, I was like, oh my God, we have to tell this story. This is phenomenal. So that was the beginning of The Pirate Queen.
Now, am I right in saying your background's in filmmaking? Is that right?
Yeah.
So how do you end up creating like an immersive game for the first time?
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge learning curve, I'm going to be honest with you. But so originally I worked at Pinewood Studios, and I worked on productions like The Crown and Ready Player One and The Great British Bake Off. And then I started up my own production company 7 years ago, and we made a bunch of short films. I exec produced a film with Billy Piper called Rare Beasts, and then I exec produced a film with Pierce Brosnan called The Last Rifleman, which came out last year. And then I'm just producing and directing a documentary series that's about to release in the UK on Sky next month called Inheritance. But we started developing The Pirate Queen as a film initially, and we teamed up with a production company in China who had just produced The Farewell, which was a big, incredible film that won the Golden Globes. But when the pandemic struck, we couldn't keep the film production going because we didn't know what the future was going to hold.
Yeah.
None of us did at the time. So I teamed up with a guy called Dave Ranyard, who was the head of PlayStation Studios in London. And I said, listen, Dave, I think we should make Pirate Queen into a game. And he was like, yeah, I think that sounds incredible. So we got funding, made a prototype that then went on and won at Raindance Film Festival. And then we showed that to Meta. And Meta were like, this is amazing. We have to make this into a game with you guys. So that then kicked off an 18-month development process. We got selected for Tribeca. Lucy Liu then came on board with the project. We then won Tribeca, and now we're releasing the game. So it's been a bizarre, bizarre journey.
Amazing. Well, congratulations on all that. I'm guessing in your industry, talent is, you know, very competitive to try and get the best people in. It's something that we've been asking a lot of our guests here in terms of how do you find and recruit that best talent?
Yeah, and it's a really good question. I think especially in the games industry, talent is so hard to find because it's so competitive, and it's a challenge that we all face. I mean, for us, we reach out directly through networks and contacts. So the BFI network is an incredible network. Yuki for the games industry is brilliant as well. There are games meetups like BAFTA Connect is also a really good resource. So because we're a UK-based company, we kind of tap into all of those networks. And then on top of that, we do liaise with recruiters so that we can find specific talent. So for example, with QA, we go out to recruiters to see if we can find QA talent. And then on top of that, it's sort of word of mouth and just reaching out and building relationships. I think if you're looking to get into a specific industry, do tap into the resources that you have in terms of, you know, the equivalent of the BFI or BAFTA Connect and those sort of meetups, because it is who you know, and trying to hustle and get your name out there is the best way to do it.
Yeah. Now, you're no stranger to podcasts, because I know you are the host of the Women Behind the Scenes podcast. But I was just wondering, as a female filmmaker and CEO, how important is it for you to promote and highlight the role of women in filmmaking and the gaming industry?
Hugely, hugely. I'm really proud of our company that we're a female-led studio. And the games and the stories that we tell are predominantly about women. I think that this industry is really, really hard, and especially in the games industry, you know, historically it has been very male focused, and so there's a really nice change, and the whole industry is really proactively trying to champion female-led studios, female-led narratives, and that's really lovely to see. So yeah, for us it's a driving factor, yeah. 100%.
So what's next for Singer Studios? Where can you take the company?
That's good. A very big question. Well, we're launching the Pirate Queen podcast, so that's going to come out in the next couple of months. And then the Pirate Queen graphic novel comes out at the end of the year, which is really exciting. We're developing it into a film as well, because the whole sort of ethos of our company is that we create content that is across media, so we're a cross-media company. So we're building the Pirate Queen into a franchise, and we're one of the first games to launch in VR and then spanning into a franchise. So you have games like The Last of Us or The Witcher, which started as a video game and then went into a TV series, but no one's ever done it with VR before.
Right.
So we're quite literally breaking new ground by launching the Pirate Queen as VR first and then building out the franchise, which is really exciting.
Amazing. Well, look, congratulations on getting to where you've got so far with Pirate Queen. Good luck with all those new projects coming along. But for now, Eloise Singer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so we're now joined by Alex Wills, the CXO of Disguise. Alex, thank you so much for joining us. Do you want to start by just giving us an idea of some of the projects that Disguise are powering in this whole event and immersive experience area?
Yeah, sure. And a bit about Disguise, for people who don't know it, you know, we're a visual experience platform. We make hardware and software that does power these amazing immersive concerts, amazing immersive virtual productions, broadcast studios, and the like. And yeah, some of the biggest shows we're running at the moment, we're running the Taylor Swift tour. All the visual material is being powered by us, with a live performance platform in the Sphere. We just finished the U2 residency there.
Amazing.
And quite an amazing canvas to play off there.
Yeah.
And yeah, the other big rise is virtual production studios growing. We've got about 400 around the world, from Hong Kong to Korea to Japan to America. So yeah, it's a booming time because everyone is wanting more sort of visual spectacle.
Yeah. Now, I don't know how we're going to keep the answer to this next question quite short for this particular interview, but how does the tech behind all this immersive experience, how does it all work?
Good question. Well, a lot of it is driven by the sort of display. So LED panels have become more sort of fine in their sort of pitch. They can produce more sort of visual quality material. And that's also projections. You have a mix of projection or LED. And so we create the hardware and software that almost creates a digital twin of your environment. So it'll create the, it'll put the LED wall, the stadium if it's a rock concert or a big gig, and then we map all of the visual material that's been produced by amazing creative partners onto the wall or onto the projections, and control it all in real time. So we have a timeline system and we queue it all up, and that's for sort of live shows. For virtual production, similar technology. It's an LED wall, and the only difference is we have a sort of camera in there, and the camera is then virtualized or digitized. So the camera is tracked in real time. That data is put into our software designer, and so you have the LED wall, you have the camera data, and so whenever that moves, and you have a 3D scene, a real-time engine scene on the back plate, that moves in real time, and it creates this amazing look of like you're in this scene. If you're framed up right, you're in this scene, and you're transported to wherever, and the actor has great feedback to see what they're doing.
Is this your first time at South By?
First time with Disguise. I've been a few times in previous guises, but first time the Disguise is here, which is super exciting.
Okay, and what is it that you're showcasing specifically at the event this week?
We're with UK House, and we brought a virtual production studio to the heart of Austin, which is no mean feat, but that's kind of one of the great things at the moment with sort of virtual production is it is becoming more modular. So we're working with great partners to bring the camera tracking, to bring the LED, to bring our servers, our equipment, our software. We've got a great team, and we put up a volume. And on the first day, we ran an amazing immersive experience with great partner in Chrome Productions, great production company. And we had a bike, and we had a robot arm, and we had 200 people coming through and having an experience of jumping on and having a go in a very high-end film production shoot.
Right. One of the topics that comes up a lot in this podcast is AI. I was just wondering what, you know, do you see things like AI and facial computing playing in the development of, you know, what you offer?
Yeah, well, one of the issues we see is a content issue. So these screens are amazing and the technology is incredible, but to create the content, the photorealistic content for them, is often a challenge. So we have a range of people can do video, they can do 3D real time, but it costs quite a lot of money and time for build those teams to build that content. And the potential for Gen AI is to help speed that up. You know, it's early days at the moment. Some of the early, you know, demos are incredible, but it's got a bit of a way to go. But we're seeing that opportunity to create content at speed and help the creative process. So that's one angle, the sort of Gen AI, the content creation process. The other one is just helping us with workflows and helping our developers, develop, you know, faster on the platform using AI, sort of co-pilot type tools. And then also as a user guide for our user base, helping, we're creating a system that can help them access the information they need sort of faster.
You talk about sort of like the teams that are working on that. One of the challenges, I guess, in your industry is finding the best talent. How do you actually attract that talent to Disguise?
Well, interesting enough, we're running a virtual production accelerator, a mini version today at South By, okay. And we have a global program because for virtual production and any new technology, it's really tough for talent. You know, you don't have people, it's net new, it's only been around for 4+ years, yeah. So you just don't have the talent base. You've got a lot of people transitioning over, but they need sort of the skills and the ways of working to sort of understand this new tech and really help the adoption. So we set up this global training program. We've had about over 100 people through it now in everywhere from America, UK, over to APAC, and that's really just trying to, attack that sort of challenge that there is, which is just there isn't enough talent. So trying to upskill people who are in the industry or bring new people in. And we have a really extensive training and learning and development program at Disguise called Disguise Learn.
Tremendous. You talked about U2 and Taylor Swift. Can you give us any sneak previews of what's coming up, or are you just not allowed to say?
Well, I think it's been announced. Hopefully I won't get in trouble, but Adele is doing a one-off concert in Munich in an 80,000 strong pop-up stadium, which right. Is pretty amazing, and we might have something to do with that, which could be pretty fun.
You really do have a great job, don't you?
I don't get to go to all the gigs.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Listen, Alex Wills of Disguise, thank you so much for taking the time to come and chat to us.
Thanks very much.
Cheers. So I'm now joined by John Scott, the Head of Learning, Design and Strategy at Masterclass at Work. Thanks so much for joining us, John, because I know you've literally just come off stage, haven't you?
I have, yeah. Just did a presentation.
Fantastic. Now, it sounds like a fascinating talk. It's on how learning from people with diverse perspectives can enhance our soft skill learning. Tell us a little bit about the talk, the reaction in the room, but also give us some examples of what you were talking about.
Yeah, so, you know, Masterclass at Work, we really focused on developing kind of soft skills, human skills, you know, communication, leadership, and a great way to learn those skills is through storytelling. The idea being that we can hear stories from very diverse people, different professional backgrounds, different types of experience, and those stories really resonate. The idea of storytelling as a modality of learning is ancient, indigenous wisdom, right? Tell me a fact, I might remember it. Tell me a story, it lives in my heart forever. And it's a really powerful way to learn, particularly in an environment that's so media saturated, an attention economy. How do we get people hooked on learning? Storytelling is how Masterclass really tries to do that in developing those workplace skills.
And so the talk that you gave, can you give some examples of what you were focusing on?
Yeah, so one great example is we talked about negotiation.
Okay. Right?
Negotiation, a core skill. We use it in our daily lives, we use it at work. Now, you could learn negotiation from lots of people online, and you might see a PowerPoint presentation, but now we present negotiation through the former FBI hostage negotiator, Chris Voss.
Okay.
Who opens up by telling a story about a hostage situation, and then he teaches you a skill like mirroring. And you know, so you're hearing this story and a tool, and you have a really specific context. Now, most of us are not going to negotiate a hostage situation, but then he also shows you how to apply that tool in the context of negotiating for a higher salary at work, or negotiating with your teenage daughter who wants to go out past her curfew. And so this idea that these stories are hooking us emotionally, but also helping us apply these tools in different contexts, is a really great example of how you would never expect workplace learning, you know, to have a hostage negotiator yeah. as the source of the expertise, but it has great translation, and it really, I think, people get motivated and inspired by that.
You think would you say it's the most powerful way of getting this learning across?
So I definitely think it should be an integral part of the learning experience. Now, on its own, it might not be so effective. What you want to do is wrap good learning design principles around that. So, you know, telling the story as the hook, having some explicit instruction around how that tool actually works. How do you actually execute on that? Being able to summarize the information in a coherent way, giving people opportunities to practice. So the story is a key piece. It's what captures our imagination and inspires us, but it's not the end in itself.
Yeah. So that's a little bit more about Masterclass at Work then. How many sessions are on, you know, at any one time? What different types of topics, and how many people are going through the process?
Yeah, so Masterclass at Work is really leveraging the content from our Masterclass consumer platform. Yeah. So that's been around for 8 years or so, and we have over 200 classes, video-based online classes taught by the world's best. What we've done with Masterclass at Work is taken that amazing content, aligned it against key workplace skills, and actually started to repackage the learning a little bit, where you can get a sampling, let's say around problem solving. You can learn about problem solving in Masterclass at Work's platform from Terence Tao, the mathematician, from Richard Branson talking about solving problems with Virgin, from Indra Nooyi, the former CEO of Pepsi, talking about zooming in and zooming out of a solution to understand it at a very granular, very macro level. So we've really taken these key power skills, taken our great content, and designed new curricula that really solve pressing business problems for organizations.
So if you're looking to educate your staff, where do you start in terms of building these plans? Which courses to focus on?
Yeah, so we do a ton of user research. We go out, we talk to businesses, we talk to consumers. What do you want to learn about? What are the big problems that you're facing in your business today? You know, a lot of it's obviously, how do we adapt to a world of AI, right? That's probably the most pressing conversation
today. Comes up
today.
All the time.
And this idea that, you know, well, what are the uniquely human skills that people need to thrive and collaborate with people and with machines is really key. And so things around communication, things around lateral thinking, being able to move across disciplinary domains as you work with these machines, those are really valuable skills we're hearing people talk about a lot. Leadership, always really key. So we get that user research, that those insights about what people want to learn about, what are these pressing business problems, and then we go out and we think about, well, you know, who is the best in the world to teach that skill? Or we may be talking to, great example that I mentioned in the talk today, we have a class from Kevin Hart, right? In his class, you know, he's talking about humor, how to use humor, but in sharing his life experiences, his life stories, you're getting skills around resilience, right? You know, how do you overcome the challenges of rising to the level of fame that he did? He talks about his experience selling in a retail store, selling sneakers, and we've leveraged that to help upskill people who are working in retail context. So he's a comedian, his class is about humor, but the lessons have such universal application, and that's what the surprise is. That was the talk track, was really this idea of surprising learnings catch us off guard. That's what's sticky, that's what sticks in us when we're learning.
That's great. One of the things that we've been talking a lot here is about talent, and how do you bring talent into the business. I'm just intrigued to know how you guys at Masterclass at Work attract best talent for what you're doing.
Yeah, you know, I think it starts with a really strong culture, right? The culture of an organization, that's the intangible value that it brings. That's what brings people in. You know, certainly there's exciting jobs or there's a brand name, but I think ultimately as you start to evaluate and you want to bring in talent, you want to have that strong culture. And I think a strong culture is actually built through storytelling, an organization's ability to share stories, share common experiences, create a common vocabulary. And so that's how we actually use Masterclass at Work at Masterclass to help build culture. A great example, we do every week, we do our kind of wins and losses. We evaluate, you know, what went well, what's something we can learn about, what's something we can learn from. And we use our video content to kind of shape those lessons. So Sarah Blakely, the founder of Spanx, talks about when she was growing up at the dinner table, her father would ask her, what did you fail at today? And it was a way of being okay with failure. And so we use those lessons to build culture, build common experience. And I think that's key to bringing in great talent, is you feel connected to other people, other humans, and a great mission.
I might put you on the spot here, but how many of these classes have you watched personally?
Oh, well, so I have gone through the gamut of them.
Right.
I mean, because I'm always, what I'm doing a lot of these classes were built, you know, before I joined Masterclass, but I'm now going through and mining them to try to find these gems. So a great example, I was putting together a set of learning around accountability. And I went into Reba McEntire's class, country singer. Now, I wouldn't necessarily watch that class for personal interest,
yeah,
but she has some great lessons about accountability, about doing what you say, saying what you mean. And I was able to, you know, leverage that in building out a piece of learning around accountability. And, you know, so again, it's surprising learning, not somebody that I would necessarily seek out to learn from. And yet here she is sharing this universal lesson. So I've definitely gone through the gamut. I'll also mention another really cool way that we're leveraging AI on our platform is to help kind of find these nuggets, these gems across thousands of hours of content and create very personalized learning experiences. So I have a particular skill or an area that I want to explore. I can query our AI, have a conversation with our AI to pull up and find those videos so that you really start to create very personalized learning experiences.
Well, I think you certainly win the award for the most name drops in all our interviews so far this session, but they all sound great. I definitely want to go and watch the Kevin Hart one, so
yeah.
I'll be looking at that. But listen, for now, John Scott, thank you so much for joining us.
All right, thank you.
Thanks so much again to all our guests who took the time to chat with us on Remote's booth here at South by Southwest.
Really hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please do follow us wherever you get your podcasts, and please do give us a positive rating and review. Plus, you can find us on all the usual social channels.
And if you'd like to get in touch with the show, you can do that via the contact form on the website at csuitepodcast.com. But for now, from me, Russell Goldsmith, and Graham Barrett, thanks very much for listening, and goodbye.